Hello, and welcome to the Off Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances. I'll be your hostess. Hello, and welcome to episode 150. Yes, the 150 episode. That's really cool, isn't it? 150 episodes. I'm so proud. It's Monday, November 10th, and it's a beautiful fall day. It's kind of a subdued light outside. What time is it? It's about 1:30 in the afternoon. I've spent the morning writing, not on any of my stuff, but you know, I volunteer with the North Carolina Folklife Institute, and I am working on a series of short articles to accompany some photographs that are going to be posted on the website. So this morning I've been writing about chicken and pastry, which is very similar to chicken and dumplings, and in fact some of the recipes you'll find for chicken and pastry are exactly the same as those recipes for chicken and dumplings. The main difference seems to be with chicken and pastry, which is very popular in the eastern part of North Carolina and parts of South Carolina. That's what they call it. Instead of chicken and dumplings, and the dumplings, instead of being little pillows, you know, or you roll the dough out really flat and cut out strips, sort of long strips of dough. I've learned that today. I've done a lot of research. The fun thing about doing stuff like this, or any kind of writing really, where you need to do some research, is it's this great excuse just to email people. And people are very nice. You know, I told you a month or so ago, I emailed Barbara Brackman about something. And, you know, it took about a week, but she got back to me. And today I emailed Marcy Cohen Ferris, who is over at UNC. And she teaches folklore and folk life over there. And I'm sure she knows the photographer who took the pictures that are going to be on the website. So, I said, I'm, volunteering for North Carolina Folk Life, blah, 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 and Chris Fowler's photographs. So, I mean, I kind of have some connections there. But she is a leading authority on Southern foodways, and just has a new book out called The Edible South from UNC Press about how sort of food and foodways shaped the South. So anyway, so I just emailed her and said, you know, I need to know a couple. You know, I was very much like, yeah, this is who I am. This is how I'm connected to you, very vaguely. And I have a couple questions. Could you answer them really quickly? Now, I just sent it and I have not heard back from her, but it was fun. It's like, oh, neat. I just emailed Marcy Cohen Ferris. How fun. And I've heard she's very nice, so I bet she will email me back. So that's what I was doing this morning, which is why at 1:30 I have like 12,000 steps. And for the first time in weeks, I think in third or fourth place. I don't know. Flippa is a little bit ahead of me still. And of course, Terry, always ahead. Anyway, I just have one short quilt diary today. I have to tell you, I've recorded this introduction about 10 times now. I tried to do it on Friday, but everybody was home. The boys had school off, and the man worked at home, and there was at one point where no one was really around, and so I thought, okay, I'll get the introduction. And then as soon as I start recording, it's just catnip for these people. They start wandering in, and I feel stupid, and I start like whispering, I'm like, well, this is just dumb. So I stopped. And then Saturday, I went to be a debate at Jack's, the big debate competition over at Cary High School. Jack is on the Durham Academy debate team, and this was big. I think there are like 10 schools there. And all the events at these competitions are judged by parents, i.e. you and me. And I have managed, this is Jack's third year of debate, he started in eighth grade, I have managed to never judge. The man judged last year, and they really want every family on the team to at least send a parent, they're really shooting for two. They want you to judge twice a year. And the man and I are very firm in our conviction that we will judge once a year. And we'll bake brownies at any other time or do any other like housekeeping chores we're asked to do. But once a year, it's just all we're good for. For me, it was like, so this high school, I don't know when it was built. You know, it's not ancient. It could have been built in the 80s or even 70s. But, you know, I went to three high schools. One which was very small and was basically an old army barracks, and then one outside of D.C. in Northern Virginia, West Springfield High School, which was humongous. And then I ended up in Texas at a medium-sized high school. And this Cary High School really reminded me of the humongous high school, West Springfield. And there's just something about being in high school. just does not make me go dance and think of John Hughes movies or anything. It's just mostly like, let me out of here. And the thing about the competition on Saturday is I get there, so I take Jack. Unfortunately, the nice thing, one of the reasons I signed up for this is it's close by. The team travels all over the state, and this was just like 30 minutes from our house, and we didn't have to be there till 9. So those were two great reasons to sign up for the Cary High School event. Well, we got there at 9, and then I waited first round judges to be announced. And my name's not on the list, so I'm kind of like, okay, because I'm a little bit dreading it. I'm like, I want to do a good job, and I'm scared I won't. So it's like, okay, off the hook, excellent. But I don't, second round, about 11:30, second round judges are announced. I'm not called again. So suddenly it's like, all right, this is getting boring. And I brought a book and I brought knitting. And I really wish I had, you know, brought my computer and some headphones and I could have, you know, watched Netflix or listened to podcasts or something. And, you know, the third round didn't start till 2. So from 9 to 2 for 5 hours, I believe that is, just kind of sat around the media center at Cary High School and then took walks and felt like, wow, so glad I'm not in high school anymore. So, yeah, anyway, and then I did judge 2 events, and it's very, I mean, the events themselves, the kids performing and making speeches, and, I mean, they're great, you know. I mean, I love the kids at these things. I did speech and debate. I did the speech side. I did my senior year. I think I did it my junior year too. I don't remember much about the competitions, but you know, it was fun. And it's a neat subculture. I mean, really, if you're folklorist, you could go in and study debate subculture. And it was just, you know, all that's great, and I'm glad Jack's a part of that. But judging it's just very intense. I mean, judging 2 rounds, I was just exhausted by the end of it. I was so drained by the time I got home. So I've decided never again. It's the man's turn next year. And then I'm blowing off senior year. Just am. Make me judge. Kick my kid off the team. I don't care. I'll give someone $100 to go in my place. I really would. I would pay someone $100 to go be Frances Dow at a debate competition. So if you need a little extra money, say in 2016, 2017, let me know. I'll pay you. Oh my goodness. Anyway, so I have not made a lot of progress on my half square triangle border. I'm very close. I have one side to go, and I do believe I will then do a darker border around. Somebody suggested a white border, you know, to not cut off points. And was that the reason? I can't remember the reason. We'll go over comments in a minute. I got so many comments. You guys are so nice. It's like a guilt trip, and you're like, oh, she's trying to guilt trip us. I guess we better, you know. So it was very cool, and I appreciate it. But nonetheless, so I'm hoping my Bible study was canceled tonight, which is good. All right, I know, this is a bit of a rambly intro, which is fine, because I don't actually have much of a quilt diary, so this is like where all the meat is going to be in this episode. So, you know, I'm doing this Bible study through Duke Chapel, and it's the one I did it for 2 years, and then last year took a break and joined back in this year. And I don't know, like, when you were in high school, if you ever had a boyfriend that you dated for a while, he was, like, really nice, and he was cute, you know, not, like, overwhelmingly good-looking, but cute and nice, and he treated you well, and after a while, you just were kind of bored. Or it just wasn't, you know, there were other guys out there just were more interesting to you. And so you broke up. And maybe a few months later or the next school year, you see him again. And, you know, you talk. You're at a party or something and you talk and you have a lot of fun and make each other laugh. And you're thinking, oh, yeah, he was really great. Wow, why did I break up with him? And you get back together. And then within a week, you're like, wow, that was a mistake. Now I remember why I broke up. My Bible study is kind of like that. So this is, it's a study program called Disciples, which I think is developed by the United Methodist Church. Duke Chapel is, you know, Duke is a Methodist school. You don't have to be Methodist to go there, clearly, but it started out with a basis being connected with the Methodist Church. So, And it's the study this year is okay. It's not great. And the group is the core group that I was with for 2 years, and this year there are about five more people, which is good because what happened the first 2 years is that we got to know each other so well that the meetings would go on forever, in part because they were supposed to start at 6:30, and we really didn't start doing the study till 7:30 because we were chatting and and catching up. And our leader, Rick, whom I adore, he wasn't really good about keeping us on track, and so we would get done at 10. So this year I'm happy for the bigger group because there's not going to be that same group cohesion. And that's true. There's not. And for it's we started up in September, and for the first 2 months it was led by Rick and his partner Whitney. Unfortunately, a couple weeks ago, Rick and Whitney broke up. They've been together for 27 years. And Whitney just decided he was done. So he stopped leading the group, and he was the one who really cracked the whip. He was the one who made us stay on time and kept the conversation going, the discussion going. So now it's just Rick, and it's Rick and this other guy, Lee. And Lee is, you know how in any group there's one person who, if that person weren't in the group, you would be like, what a great group. But there's always that person. Now, the nice thing about Lee is now the person who used to be that person in this Bible study is no longer that person. I'm very happy to see her. She, compared to Lee, she's great. And Lee's not a bad guy. I don't dislike him. He's there with his wife, Terry, and Terry's fabulous. And sometimes I look at Terry and go, why are you married to Lee? I don't understand that partnership at all, but none of my business. Lee, about 20 years or so ago, and I know this because he's told this story many times now, told it the first night and refers to it often. He had a near-death experience. Before that experience, wasn't particularly religious or interested in spiritual seeking of any sort, just kind of practical, down-to-earth tax accountant. Had a near-death experience, came back, and suddenly, I think he saw God or saw some bright lights or had something happen and came back. And now he's all about being a spiritual seeker. And, he reads all the sacred books. And, I think I think his thing is it's all the same. So we're all, worshiping the same God, and it's just what path are you on? And, I mean, I'm pretty much a universalist in my tendencies. Having said that, the great religions, they're not all the same. There's some very different ideas going on. But any event, so we've got the great spiritual seeker in our midst, and he's had many interesting experiences. So last week we had read many, many passages about Jesus and healing and Jesus and exorcisms, which I find all very interesting stuff. And I'm open-minded. I mean, I always kind of think with that stuff, with the demon-possessed people, I just assume they were schizophrenic. But who knows? Maybe there were demons and Jesus got them out of there. Good for him. That needed to happen. Well, as it turns out, Lee, he's very interested in the human mind and the brain. And he studied hypnosis because he was interested in how you could control the brain. And somehow there was a scenario where he was in a hospital with a woman who had a terrible pain in her arm, and the doctors couldn't figure out why. I don't know why Lee was there. I don't understand the context of the story wasn't given. Lee hypnotized this woman and said, "What is the source of your pain?" And a man's voice came out of her and explained that he had died in an ambulance and his spirit left his body and entered the nearest body, and it turned out that yes, it was this woman's body. And he had died in a car wreck and yes, had many broken bones, including in his arm. So that's why he had invaded this woman's arm and now was speaking out of it. So Lee talked to him and asked him to leave the woman. And he did. And then the pain was gone. Yes, that is what my Bible study has come to, listening to these stories, these kind of like, and again, I'm miss open-minded. I'm like, I, but I'm not that open. I'm just sort of like, one, I think you're crazy. And two, what's this got to do with Jesus? I mean, so I'm kind of happy there's not Bible study tonight. Not happy that Rick is sick. That's why we're not having it. But I'm kind of going, I don't know how much longer I can do this. And it feels like breaking up with that boyfriend again. Because part of the reason I stopped part of it is my mom got sick and just didn't know when I was going to be needed, didn't know what the emotional intensity of the year was going to be like. And it all turned out very well. But at the time, I felt like, yeah, I'm not going to make this commitment. But part of it, too, was even earlier, before my mom got sick, I was thinking, I don't think I can do this again. And I don't know what made me. I think just the people from the study, and I have several good friends, and they were kind of like, come back, let's do this. It's going to be great. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And I'm like, I might have to break up with you again. But since I don't have Bible study, maybe I'll actually get some quilting done. And I'm meeting a friend for coffee near Thimble Pleasures on Wednesday, so I'm definitely going to go in and buy my backing fabric, and I'll probably go to Joann's to get my batting. But who knows, maybe by next weekend, I will be quilting, along with our friend Leah Day, whose class I am taking in Craftsy. And speaking of Leah Day, and this will move us into our comments, into more quilting material, she commented on the last episode. This is because Lisa commented on Leah Day's blog just to inform her that, hey, Frances is talking about you in a good way, and you might be interested in this discussion. So I don't know that Leah Day listened to the podcast. There's nothing in her comment that suggested that she had, but what she wrote was, thank you for linking up my copyright terrorism post and sharing this perspective with your audience. The ultimate point is answering the question, what do we want our quilting world to look and feel like? A place where people can create with abandon and feel excited to try new things? Or a place where we live in fear of being threatened with lawsuits just for displaying a quilt picture on a blog? We create this world every day with what we say and how we teach. I thought that was a great comment. Thank you, Leah Day, for coming by and making that comment. A lot of people commented on the copyright issue. I did not hear from any designer saying, wait a minute, listen to my side of things. And I don't know if that's just because they felt like, oh, I don't want to make that comment, which, you know, you should. If you feel that way, if you have a case to make, come on and make it. That's fine by me. But it also may be that the designers that I know or who listen to this podcast, maybe, yeah, we just want to make our money, but we're not going, you know, we're not checking out people's blogs to see whether or not pictures of our quilts are posted. So they may quite agree with me and, well, my new friend Leah Day. No, we're not friends. Annie Smith, we're friends. Leah Day, she's my teacher. Let's see. Let me tell you, I got tons of great comments. I said, I heard from Laura, who says, when I show a quilt on my blog, I give a designer credit if I've used her pattern. I also tell where my inspiration came from if it is similar to someone else's quilt. I'm not great at labeling my quilts unless they are gifts. What will future quilt historians have to do if everything is labeled for them? That's right. Let's give them some work. Otherwise, how are they going to get the grant money they need to do their job? That's an excellent point. Now, a number of people said that they would not put the designer's name on their label. I think Quilt and Jenny said that, and Noni. And they just felt like, I believe the sentiment was, the quilt is mine. Once I've made it, I've really made it mine, which I respect. Now, I do think for documentation purposes, you know, I was talking with my mom about this yesterday, and she's like, yeah, you know, you might even want to put, if you got it from a book, what the book was, which I don't think any of us are actually going to do. But you just, for the purposes of documentation, I don't know if any of you keep like really deep documentary records, not just the label, but if you keep notes on the quilts that you make. I wish I did that. I would love to have a quilt book. I do take pictures, as particularly of the quilts that I send off as gifts. And, you know, one day maybe I will do that, is get all the pictures together with, I don't know, I don't think I have enough notes on the fabric at this point. But anyway, I like documentation. I think it's fun. But I do understand when people, I think Noni said, yeah, if I were hanging a quilt, if I had a quilt on a show, yes, I would put the designer's name on there. So I think, but a number of people said that's something that they would consider doing, is putting the designer's name. And I like that idea. I'm so lazy, it's possible that I won't in the future, but I do for documentary purposes and, as I said, general respect. Oh, by the way, Laura had a 3-paragraph comment and she wanted to know how much that is worth. I'd say that's worth $25. I feel like I've made my money this week. Let's see, I heard from Margaret Kay and Miss Lottie. And I like Miss Lottie, by the way. She commented before she listened. Get it out of the way. I like that. For me, it's just seeing a comment. Just, hey, I'm about to listen to your podcast. She said, just in case she didn't have time after she listened. So don't feel like you actually have to listen to the podcast to comment. I just like hearing from you. Heard from Phil Still Stitchin', and heard from Michelle, which she had a funny comment. So a friend apparently asked her husband how much Michelle would charge to make a quilt. She had posted a picture of a quilt, and the friend wanted to know if she would make that quilt for his wife. And her husband told him, well, the minimum price would be $1,000. And the friend's response was, I'll tell my wife that Michelle doesn't have time. Heard from Terry, who uses Jay's half square triangle method. I think that Laura said that she did too. And I also think Laura might have, someone emailed me, and I think it was Laura, saying that she uses Eleanor Burns half square triangle squaring up ruler. And Laura, I did go ahead and get one of those for when I start using Jay's half square triangle method. So Terry uses Jay's half square half square triangle method, and she is one of those girls who makes them a fair bit larger on purpose and trims them down, which I feel like I've done in the past and have not done lately, and I might start doing again. Sue in upstate New York, another commenter, hasn't even listened to the pod. By now, she may have listened to the podcast, but at the time she commented, hadn't listened. And one thing she said about the mosaic quilt, she said, I think a blue final border, perhaps the same size as the inner border, would look terrific and keep the quilt squarer than half square triangles will. And I think that's exactly right, especially given that they're my half square triangles. Now, Dorothy liked the idea of a light border, which will make that half square triangle border, quote unquote, float, and therefore emphasize all those sharp points. And parentheses, she wrote, they are sharp points, right? Oh, Dorothy, you're funny. Her friend Lisa, who I believe is who, I think it's the same Lisa who connected Leah Day to my blog. And Lisa writes, Leah is right. People will simply move on to another hobby where they don't have to fear legal action. Really, who needs these worries? And I agree. I mean, it's just, it makes it, I mean, we're just in this funny place, right? What most of us are doing is non-commercial. We are not trying to make money off our quilts. We're making them as gifts, but we are undergirding a $1 billion a year, $3 billion a year commercial venture. And there's a and I feel like lines are being crossed when these sort of copyright issues come up, because the fact is, we might not be making certain quilts if we didn't have these patterns available. And by the way, several people said, I don't use patterns for this reason, because of the copyright issues. I won't buy a pattern if there's, really restrictive copyright rules printed on the pattern. But the fact is, if we stop making quilts because we're scared of legal action, who are the designers going to design for? There's got to be a happy middle ground, and there's got to be that balance between people trying to make money and us. There's something about it gets ugly. It gets ugly when it starts becoming litigious. It just does. Heard from Mary Ann, who was actually commenting on episode 148. I think she came back and also commented on episode 149 as well. But her, so she was saying about rules. She limits herself to two, okay, maybe four active projects at a time, usually one by hand and one by machine. Actually, that's the only rule she mentions. So, Marianne, if you have more rules, let me know. Because, but that's, yeah, I'm starting to pile up some UFOs and might need to impose that rule on myself as well. Shelley Beth says she doesn't post her work on the internet unless she is tired of the subject or pertains to a class that she's teaching. Her feeling is if it goes on the internet, if you put a pattern on the internet, if you put a quilt, you are gifting the world with your doings. And finally, heard from Quilt and Jenny, who wants to clarify, she is not drinking while listening to my podcast or while driving. She has just suggested the possibility of a drinking game. And I believe there's some others, other podcasty, quiltcasty drinking games that have circulated before. We ought to collect these and then sell them for Christmas presents. Oh, that's just silly. Okay, thank you. I got like over 20 comments or at least 20 comments on this episode. And that was very exciting to me. Keep them coming. Yes, it's really, yeah, I'd say $10 a paragraph, which means, Laura, that your comment was actually worth $30 to me. Wow. Wow, that is the gift that keeps on giving. So in this episode, or at least I should say for the show notes for this episode, I just put some of the links that I ran across this past week that I found interesting. There's an interview from the Quilt Alliance. It's Meg Cox interviewing Barbara Brackman that I found really interesting. Barbara Brackman talks about how she became a quilt historian in her own quilting life. I enjoyed that quite a bit. I came across, this was an odd thing. Have you heard of passage quilts? I never had, but I was reading this book I have called, let me tell you what it's called. The Quilt, A History and Celebration of an American Art Form. It's by Elise Shebler Roberts. Well, I've had this book for a while, and I've looked through it, but not read it closely. It's good. It's got quilt history, but it also looks at a lot of sort of contemporary movements, different art movements, as well as, you know, what she calls, well, I can't remember what she calls it, but let's say AIDS quilts and quilts for soldiers, whatever that's called, but those various different things. And she, there's a section about passage quilts, and these are quilts that you make after, usually after someone has died, and oftentimes using their clothes. But it's a sort of a quilt of transition. It's a kind of a therapeutic kind of quilt making. Well, it turns out that the woman who does these workshops and the woman who's referred to in the articles is named Sherry Lynn Wood. You might have heard of her. She is very into improvisational quilting. She's got a book coming out in 2015 about improvisational quilting, and the workshops she does use improv quilting to help people, oftentimes people who have not quilted before, to make these quilts. And I thought, well, that's really interesting, and I loved the quilts pictured in this section. So I thought, well, I'm going to look up Sherry Lynn Wood. Oh, the other thing that made me want to look her up is I showed one of her quilts and mentioned that she was from Durham, North Carolina. Now, I had not heard of her. I thought, well, I wonder if, you know, maybe she's my neighbor. Maybe I could go knock on her door. So I looked her up, and what it looks like, she spends time, she lives both in Durham and the Bay Area, and more recent articles about her suggest that really she lives mostly in the Bay Area now, but comes back to North Carolina to do workshops. And she did an improv workshop at Spoonflower, which is in Durham, and that's the company where you can send in a fabric design and they will create the fabric for you. But she also does these transition quilt workshops as well. And there was I went to her website, and there was a list of newspaper magazine articles about her. So I clicked on the first one, and it was a newspaper article that appeared in 2005 in the Durham Herald Sun. And what was funny is one of the first people that the reporter interviewed for the article was the widow of a friend of mine who died in 2002. And I did not know her well. So my friend's name was Tim McLaurin. He's a North Carolina writer. and who I've known for years and years, and was a close family friend, both of mine and the man's. But I actually met him way back in the day when he was still married to his first wife, and I had just finished grad school, and I was a nanny for them for about a year, and got very close to the family and to the kids, who I still, his first wife, Katie, and I, like, we just had drinks a couple months ago, and just ran into Christopher, who's all grown up. He was 4 when I knew him, when I took care of him. Ran into him at Whole Foods the other day, so that, they're still part of my life. But Tim and Katie broke up in the mid-90s, and Tim remarried this woman, Carol, and he sadly died of cancer in 2002. It was a recurrence of cancer. And in this article, Carol talked about how she was taking her husband Tim's shirts and making a quilt for the kids, making quilts for his children, her stepchildren. And it was just so odd. It's like, I know her, not well, but I certainly know Christopher and Megan, the children she was making the quilts for, who are now adults. And it was just, Tim was a dear friend. And so that was just one of those odd things. Never heard of Sherry Lynn Wood, and suddenly I'm reading an article about her, which features people who are very important to me in my life. So I have some links to that article, so you can read more about Passage Quilts, and an interview with Sherry Lynn Wood about Passage Quilts, and then an article about her, a fairly recent article on the Spoonflower blog. All those links are there. And through Sherry Lynn's blog on her website, I found a neat article about African-American improvisational piecing. And that reminded me that a few weeks ago, I listened to a great lecture over on the International Quilt Study Center podcast about Underground Railroad quilts. The lecture is actually, it's a few years old. I think it was in 2008, but it was given by, now I can't remember the folklorist's name, but she is a folklorist out of UNC. So that, but it was really, really interesting because, of course, the Underground Railroad quilt story is one that we love, even though we know it's not true. And it's her, she talks about reasons that are really good arguments against anyone having used these quilts to guide slaves to freedom. And but what's very funny is you can tell she has a lot of resentment for the authors of the folklorist who first wrote the book, relying on one single source. But sort of broke that story through their book and got on Oprah. And she mentions about 5 times, well, they got on Oprah, they got, tenure. but one of the most interesting parts of her discussion is how even people really love the story so much that they resist very strongly when you say, it probably didn't happen. And you can say, and here's why. And they'll still say, no, no, no. They still love the story. So I find that fascinating. So it's good if you're looking. It's a vidcast. So, hey. So I put the link to that. And then I just actually put the general link to the International Quilt Study Center list of podcasts and vidcasts. I've really, really enjoyed them. So that's what's on the blog, which is http://theoffkilterquilt.wordpress.com. Please come visit. You don't even have to listen to the podcast to comment. You can just comment and say, I love the, some of my favorite comments are, haven't listened yet, just come on over to comment. Like, excellent. That's right. Get it out of the way. Get it off your plate. And then you can listen to the podcast without feeling anxious about, I have to think of something to comment. Oh, I hope she says something that makes me want to comment. Just come over and comment. So I didn't even listen, but I think you're great. All right, so I've got, like I said, just one quilt diary, and it's not that exciting. Well, it may be very exciting, but I made it last Thursday, so it's Monday. What did I talk about? Who knows? Nobody knows at this point what I said, but you, my friend, are about to find out. On with the quilt diaries. swim team, and they taught him how to swim. And the coach is fun and young, and she's a bit of a character. So it's a happy little swim team, and Jack seems to be happy on it. And it's just great for him to be doing a team and to be exercising, because that's the big thing that, is always our concern with Jack. I don't care if he plays sports officially or not, on a team in a league, but I do care that he get exercise and be healthy. And that's something we have to talk to him a lot, because he, is just very happy to sit for hours and hours in front of his computer. And, we preach moderation and good health. And this summer he rode his bike every night, and it's sort of part of the deal. Like, if you want to have your computer, then you have to do these things too. So now he swims. Yay. And I can't remember what else I talked about last Thursday, because last Thursday, it's Tuesday. That was a long time ago. Who knows what was going on then? I don't know. I think last Thursday, what was an interesting thing for me is I sewed all day, which I don't usually do. One of the things about being freelance, even though I write under contract and you ha don't have to go seeking work, which is very nice, but even though that's true, and even though I've done a lot of writing this year, and sort of at this point here in November have hit my sort of what my salary goals were, I don't have a salary, but I've made the money I was hoping to make this year, et cetera, et cetera. It's still very hard for me to take a day off during the week and just say, I'm just gonna sew. I'm just gonna do this. I always feel like I should be working. And right now I'm in between projects. I just submitted a revision. I'm waiting for notes on another project from my editor. I don't want to sit down and get started on something new. And it's real, and there's a lot going on. We're just in that busy, getting into that really busy time of year. But it's hard for me, to not be writing. And it's hard not to be working on a project that is compensated. Financially, I guess. Because I've been doing some volunteer work for the North Carolina Folklife Institute, where I've been volunteering now for several years. And, I really love doing this work. It's very fun. I think I may have talked about this yesterday, just emailing people and trying to get in touch with sort of experts in the field and learning. I just know a lot about chicken and pastry. Which is very similar dish to chicken and dumplings, but a little bit different. I like that. I like domestic history. I like food history. So that's all good. But there's part of me is like, I'm not getting paid for this, which I think is a bad mindset. But it's hard to get out of, especially when you've got college coming up, and private school bills right now, and you just always feel like I need to be making. But the fact is, I'm doing fine. So yeah, so it's rare for me to say I want to sew today, but I did on Thursday. I sewed all day, and it was fun. I listened to podcasts. I listened to The Archers. Got caught up on The Archers. Watched Netflix and sewed, and got a lot done. And I will. I don't know where I was going with that sentence, but it was a good day. It was an enjoyable day, and I know, I feel like I need a note from my mom giving me permission. Frances wasn't feeling well today, so she stayed home and quilted. But when you stay home all the time, that can be the hard part about it, is kind of working out structure and when do you get free time. And also, as a mom, that's another thing that makes it hard, is sometimes, I'll be at the end of the day, and this is so American. What did I produce today? What did I accomplish today? And I think, I didn't really do anything today. I think, but you drove kids here, and you drove kids there, and you went to the store, and you returned this at Target, and you made cookies, and you made lunch, and you made dinner, and you made breakfast. I did a lot, and so I have to remember that that's work too. So it's kind of a messed up thing. And in some ways, I guess I could tie back into the whole gift economy idea, whereas quilters, the way that perhaps we are, very sane, is that we happily make stuff without expectation of compensation and don't feel like it's a waste of time and don't feel, I don't, when I'm doing it, I never feel like, with particular, I mean, when I take a day off to do it, that's one thing. But, usually my course of my day to day, if I'm quilting, I'm not thinking I should be doing something else. And when I give a quilt away, I'm not thinking I should have sold this instead. That so it's maybe that's why quilters have such a good sense of humor and have certain sanity. Maybe, I don't know. But I think that's a good mind frame to be in, that I'm doing something out of love and for love and et cetera, et cetera. So those are my thoughts, just trying to make up for totally losing a whole 13 minutes worth of fascinating Francis talk. So now I'm just going to give you the blithering blather Francis talk. And I guess I could stop now because we all have things to do, whether we're getting paid for them or not. So I hope you have a great week, whatever week it is when you listen to this. And I hope that you make time for yourself and don't feel guilty about creating that space in which you get to do the work that you most truly love to do. And we know that's make quilts. So, as we like to say, life is short. Quilt first. I'll see you next time.